broadcasting live from the PHX.FM studio in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell stories that the traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre. I'm joined in the studio today by Rick Ubel and Mark Roden with Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona. We're going to talk about the nonprofit. We're going to talk about Subway. We're going to talk about the history of their business and their work here in the Valley. I'm very excited to have both of you gentlemen with us. Rick, Mark, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. Happy to be here.
Now, I understand that there's a lot that's unique about Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona, and I want to understand some of those nonprofit dynamics and things, but let's start by talking about, you guys have known each other for a fair amount of time, and it has to do with Subway. So what's the story? How'd you two meet?
It does. I can't speak for Rick, but for me, when I got into Subway, I think probably my biggest opportunity was I knew absolutely nothing about what I was doing. I definitely learned a lot on the job. I came from the supermarket industry where I knew a lot about selling and putting more in the shopping cart, but I didn't really realize there were a lot of bills to pay when you were done selling all that stuff. And so, you know, I didn't realize how big the electric bills were, the rent due every month. And so I got into Subway and immersed myself working, you know, 80, 90, 100 hours a week sometimes. I know the first year I was in Subway, I only took 3 days off total the whole year, and one of those was Christmas, right? So I got that, and then Rick came along, I think, about a year and a half later.
Now, yeah. Do you remember the first Subway sandwich you ate?
I do.
I remember, so I don't know, what, 30 years ago or something, more or less? I'm not sure of the timing. My aunt, who lived in the Mojave Desert and was a vegetarian, came down to visit us in Riverside, and she was all excited about this new sandwich place we have to try because they had a vegetarian sandwich with it. It was delicious, and we went. I remember going down to the little strip mall in Riverside and having my first Subway sandwich. It's grown into quite the institution, but those early days were kind of interesting.
Well, the thing that happened in the old days, you know, people eating habits have changed greatly over time. Back 30 years ago, our best-selling sandwich was, you know, a traditional Italian sandwich, the Italian BMT. And what happened in those days is, I still remember, I went through training in 1987 back in Connecticut, where Subway's based. I was a little town called Ansonia, and I was training with some guys actually that are still in the system. But I still remember we were staying. They were from Salt Lake City, and when customer came in, you know, this store did about $1,100 a week, not a day, a week. So there weren't that many customers. So we had to take turns like waiting on people. I remember the first person came in when these two guys, they were like teaming up together because there weren't that many customers. And the person came in, they said, yeah, I'll have a Italian grinder BMT. And they're like, what? And he said, I'll have an Italian grinder. And they looked at me and I said, yeah, BMT, not, ignore the grinder part. They had no idea what it was. But that back then was a really popular sandwich. The bad news is we sliced every meat by hand, and there were 20 slices of pepperoni, 16 slices of salami, 4 slices of ham, and 3 slices of bologna. And we'd sell 150 of those a day. You literally had hours on the slicer till you'd have to take a break. Your arm was ready to fall off. Things have changed a lot since then. But now turkey is by far our best-selling sandwich.
Now, you both own large Subway franchisee organizations. You go back to the earliest days of Subway here in the state. Rick, tell us a little bit about your backstory with the company. How did you find your way into it, and how have things evolved over the years?
Well, thank you. My beginning is far more auspicious than Mark's. He at least sounded like he had a business plan, came out of groceries and looked for a career opportunity and got into the Subway business. Mine is far darker. I'm a real estate broker and developer by trade. And in the late 80s, if those of you that are old enough to remember, the market crashed. It was very, very ugly. So I was actually in bankruptcy with my business partner. We couldn't sell real estate to save our lives. So we're looking for some way to stay alive. And we kind of stumbled and fell into the Subway sandwich business. So in the middle of a bankruptcy, it's hard to borrow money, but we were able to find a way at an incredibly high interest rate to borrow some money from a private individual. And We bought our first three restaurants in December of 1989, which I believe is exactly 30 years ago today, right now. As Mark alluded to, he said he didn't know what he was doing, but at least he could spell the word restaurant. I couldn't even do that. In my desperation, I reached out to really one of the only other franchisees here in the state, and that was Mark Roden. I had to phone a friend, throw out a lifeline, and I asked him to come and save me and teach me how to run this business. And he graciously volunteered, him and his staff. And I've told this story many, many times. If it wasn't for Mark, I would have never survived the first 6 months in the Subway sandwich business. My partner and I were certainly struggling at best. But then we've kind of found our way, got our feet under us, and we've been relatively successful up to this time.
Now, the franchise or franchisee kind of collective industry has certainly evolved a lot over those years. From your perspective, operating Subways here in Arizona, what's the business look like today, and how is that different from what it was when you first got in?
Well, I think that one of the biggest changes in the growth of the Subway brand over the years is that in the old days, the first 10, 15 years in the business, we were able to make a lot of decisions locally about the sandwiches that we sold and the advertising that we did and kind of the direction of the brand as it fit into the Arizona business landscape. That's changed. Subway's gotten so big, and for many good reasons, they've had to nationalize a lot of those decisions. So most advertising and marketing and food product decisions are now made on a national basis and kind of pumped down to the markets there. Advertising, television, radio are bought mostly nationally instead of locally here. And I think that's probably been one of the biggest changes I've seen.
And I think also in growth, back in the old days, there was tons of white space. So when I wanted to grow, I opened the first store in Page and Lake Havasu and Bullhead City and just on and on and on. And you always had those opportunities in these smaller towns. And it shifted a lot in recent years. We still have local assistance from the area developer. Our Subway development agent locally still helps to find locations. But a lot of it is relocation of existing, as the traffic, the freeways have changed in the valley, as new shopping centers, new anchors have come along. A lot of it is just finding a better location for existing location as opposed to opening another 50 or 100 restaurants in a year.
It's certainly a dynamic operating environment as the rise of lots of QSRs and other ways for people to access quick, healthy meals has certainly changed the landscape. I'm curious now to switch gears a little bit and talk about the nonprofit side of this, because this is not something... So, we may be aware that other fast food brands have a national presence. I think of Ronald McDonald House, for example, and things of that nature. But Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona is unique as a state-based nonprofit. Can you talk a little bit about the organization, where the idea came from, and why it's so compelling and different than what we see in other places?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways. One is that we saw a clear need to give back in the community. And when you're a leading person in your industry, I think you have both an obligation and a desire to give back to your community. And we really didn't have a good focal point. Many of our owners would give back on a per store basis. And there's downsides to that because people don't really know what to do. And one of the things I always tell people is that, because people will say to me, how can you say no to someone? But the reality is that we could get requests for 10 times what we could do. By having one particular organization, it really helps us to focus our efforts on what we decided locally was really important. And that came, Rick Scheibler is the development agent for Arizona, and he really had a desire to focus our efforts around children, which we were all anxious to wrap our arms around. And so by picking a local organization, getting all the franchisees in the state involved, and it is a statewide organization, we give back, whether it be Tucson or Flagstaff or up in the White Mountains or Yuma, we find a way to do that. So it was important to us to find something that we wanted to do that we could rally around, and also coordinated effort so we could make a bigger difference.
Now, I understand this is the 20th anniversary of Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona, and you've recently given out your millionth dollar. That's a significant contribution and lifespan for an organization of this type. Rick, what do you love most about this side of the business, the giving, the kind of having a presence in the communities, the reaching out beyond another delicious sandwich and providing something meaningful in the places you serve?
Well, it's the smiles on the faces that we get to create. It's giving to organizations that otherwise probably wouldn't get the grants for the things that we are able to fund for them, balls and courts and uniforms and the things that really start to bring children together. I just can remember being young and how proud I was to be part of a team and to be part of organized sports. And that was such a big deal to me. So we're able to help disadvantaged children in the state to put a smile on their face, make them feel like they're part of a team, give them hope and pride in what they're doing. And that's probably the thing that's the most exciting and fun for me.
One of the things that people don't realize, if you don't have kids of that age or whatever, sports gotten kind of expensive, actually. And so there's a lot of times, like in Northern Arizona, we have a large presence of the Navajo Nation, a lot of tribal members. And they've had some really successful programs for long distance running. But even things like that, to get trained by the best people. So up at NAU, they've got a high altitude sports training complex, but you know, they train a lot of the Olympic athletes go through there during the Olympic years because they're trying to learn how to train at elevation. To be able to take some of those programs and maybe buy 5 or 10 or 15 scholarships for kids that wouldn't be able to go otherwise, it's a big deal. And from our side, it's great because we get the programs are already in place. We don't have to try and organize them or run them, but take advantage of those. But we just give the financial opportunity for at-risk kids or kids that wouldn't otherwise be able to participate to do it. So it's great from our side to be able to jump in with that.
Let's talk about some of the specific types of programs and specific types of benefits. You mentioned grants. What are some of the other things that would fall under the grant umbrella? And then I also want to hear about the Cycle for Success program as well.
Well, in the grants, we have this pool of money. We have one fundraising event every fall, and we just did it last month. We raise money. And one of the things we do is we have an ongoing program called Cycle for Success. Cycle for Success is, I'm sure for Rick as well, my favorite day of the month. We go out once a month to a school. We've grown to the point where we go to two classrooms in each school and we give back. Subway provides a box lunch for every kid in the classroom. So instead of just giving a bike to one kid, we give a bike lock and helmet to a deserving kid. And it's not like the best kid on the football team, or these are people that display random acts of kindness. So the teachers go through a nominating process. We've hooked up with a great group called the Be Kind People Project here in Arizona. They're in the schools already. So they've vetted the schools. They find the Title I schools. We get to kind of like Santa Claus. We get to come in every month. But I have to tell you, Cycle for Success, every month or 9 months out of the year, is the best program. But just to give you an idea, 2 months ago, we walked into a classroom and I give the girl, you know, call the name after we say some nice things. She comes up and we always have to take pictures, which as a young person, I hated having my picture taken. As an adult, I still hate getting my picture taken, but we had this girl come up and we always say, okay, we got to take all these pictures, right? So we got to have the parents jump in and the teachers jump in and, you know, and then the PR firm, everybody needs their pictures, the school district, you know, so it's kind of ugly. But while we're doing this, the teacher kind of says in my ear while we're posing, thank goodness it was today, because if you had come yesterday, she wouldn't have been here. I said, oh, what's going on? She said, yeah, her grandfather's in the hospital. And he wouldn't, he's you're not doing well or whatever. So after we get done with all the pictures, when we were kind of sitting down with the girl, I asked her, you have to be a little careful how you ask it, but I asked her if she was born in Arizona or whatever. And she said, I lived in Arizona until I was four. Then my dad died and I moved to Mexico for 4 years, but then my mom couldn't make it anymore. So we moved back here so my grandfather could help raise me. And I said, well, you know, hopefully your grandfather is going to, you know, turn the corner. She goes, well, thank you. She goes, but he's going to die either today or tonight. And I said, oh, you know, wow. I'm so sorry. And she said, I owe you an apology. And I said, what do you owe me an apology for? She said, because you probably think it's strange that I'm not crying. And I said, why is that? She goes, well, I was crying yesterday. I was crying a lot yesterday, but my grandfather said to me, don't cry. He said, I want you to enjoy life and go ahead and enjoy the great life I've had. So don't cry. So I'm trying not to cry. I hope that's okay, but I don't want it to look bad. So then I started crying. You know what I mean? Right. It's just, it's that kind of a program where you're reaching people. You almost, and I'm sure Rick does this too, you almost have to stop and let, because you don't realize how impactful your moment can be. It's a great program. And so there's that. And then you asked about the grants, and you know, we take the majority of our money goes in grants. And so we solicit grant applications. As a matter of fact, I think we're starting this month for this year's round of grant awards. And we do the most of it's through Facebook. So if the people want to reach out and find Subway Kids and Sports on Facebook, but we try and find a variety of nonprofits statewide. That's one thing, you know, we have to sometimes finding ones in Sierra Vista or Bullhead City is a little harder.
Yes.
But find that. And I know Rick knows we, and you're part of the process. Talk about some of the different opportunities we have.
Well, the Mark really has started this program and has been the champion for Subway Kids and Sports all of these years. I've been lucky enough to be involved with Cycle for Success and going out. And again, such a different kind of award. It's not a scholastic. It's not academic. It's not sports related. It's just awards to children that do nice things for other kids. And so it's just amazing to watch these young kids that may not be super achievers in other areas get an award and get recognized just for being kind. So that's awesome.
Do you remember the young person that we went to on the West Side? It was, we used to go once a month. And this was like, can we do another one? I'm like, yeah, what's going on? They said, well, this kid went into the canal and tried to save another kid's dog.
Yes,
I remember that. It didn't do it. And they said, so, but the kid that we gave the award to went home and got his piggy bank and had like $1.63 and said, here, maybe you can buy another dog. And I'm going to give you my savings so you can buy a dog. And we're like, how great is that? So we went and gave him a bike ride. I mean, it's those kind of things that are just memorable.
Well, I think it's both memorable and it's hugely impactful beyond the bike, beyond the lunch. You know, I mean, if I was an elementary school student, to not have to go to the cafeteria one day would be a win no matter what. Even if I wasn't getting the bike, I must be happy that I'm getting a Subway lunch delivered to the classroom. But beyond all that, I think one of the greatest things that we all can do more of is simply make a big deal about the small things that matter. You get what you focus on in life. And especially for those of us as parents or not, as grownups, there's a lot that's capturing our attention and riling up our emotions, positive and negative. But the way the media trends these days, a lot of it's negative. We're all upset for different reasons, but we're all upset.
Sure.
And to be able to just stop for a minute and connect with the world of a young human being who sees the world very differently than we do. The story about the girl who shared with you why she's trying not to cry, the kid who's $1.63, all the money in the world that he had, and he wanted to use that to help his friend deal with loss. I mean, we need to be reminded of that as much as the kids do. And so it must be a hugely enriching part of your own professional life to have that opportunity. Let's talk a little bit about how this all works as we wrap up here. Where's the money come from? How do people, you mentioned the Facebook page, but how do people who want to apply for some of these grants find their way to you? Can you kind of walk us through the life cycle of an award?
Why don't you talk about how people can apply, and I can talk a little bit more about the fundraising side.
Yeah, I know that we have a webpage, which is Subway Kids and Sports with the word and written on subwaykidsandsports.com. I'm sorry, it's subwaykidsandsportsaz.com. And they can always go there and get more information. But again, going through Facebook, I think gives all the information on the grant application process. I think the window is open here till the end of this month. So we encourage people to jump in and do that. And as Rick said, the money comes typically from a lot of vendors and he's heavily involved in that.
Right. I spent 19 years as a director of an organization called the Independent Purchasing Co-op, which is a purchasing co-op, if you will, for Subway. all over the world, about a $5 billion a year company. And through that organization, I got to know many of the vendors that serve Subway in the United States and Canada and beyond, and developed relationships with those fine folks. And we're able to get a lot of those people to jump on board and financially and emotionally, and come out and be part of our golf tournament and support us in many, many ways. So that's really my interest and my focus is really on the fundraising side. Mark does the heavy lifting of managing the whole event there. And I just kind of fill in one small piece.
You know, we've had some vendors been with us since the beginning. One of them locally, Shamrock Farms, they provide, when we go out and do that cycle for success every month, I told you bring in the box lunch, but Shamrock provides milk for us. Believe it or not, chocolate milk, big deal when we go out there.
I have two boys yeah. that, and I know the really? Chocolate milk thing.
It's yes. a treat. I don't think they allow it in the school, so it's a big deal.
And Shamrock Farms, we've gone there with the kids and like toured the farm. It's an amazing, thing that they've got going on. So you've partnered with them.
Yeah. Coca-Cola gives us Dasani water to bring in every month. So, you know, we're very fortunate. We have these vendors like Kraftmark Bakery gives us the cookies and for our tournament. And it's been great. They've been very supportive. It's a big deal. And lately, they've been coming out every year around the event and coming to our Subway Kids and Sports event to see what we do in the schools. And I think that's really got them enrolled in the process.
Now, beyond Subway Kids and Sports, are there other ways that Subway is taking an active role in giving back, either at the store level or in the state? I mean, aside from the entirely volunteer nonprofit that you have that's doing all these things, what else is going on in the mix of community development relations?
Well, we all, as independent franchise owners, there's about 55 franchisees in Arizona for the 450 roughly restaurants that are here. And everybody has their own pet projects. Our company gets requests for donations for food for different organizations constantly. And so we as individually make food and donate money and for different organizations to be street fighters out there, to be part of an organization, not only collectively, but individually as franchisees. So I know that Mark gives away an incredible amount of product to organizations during the course of the year, and so do we. And other franchisees here in Arizona do also. So other than Subway Kids and Sports, really it's handled more at a company franchisee level as to what we donate.
And Rick is perhaps intentionally excluding something he does on a much more global basis. Why don't you tell him a little about what you're doing outside of the United States?
Okay. Well, I'm very involved in, I'm with an organization here in Phoenix called Partners in Action. And one of the projects that we oversee and help manage about 13 years ago, we bought a city actually in a country called Swaziland. The city's called Bulembu, a small town. In 2001, there were about 11,000 people living there. It was a mining town. People in Arizona can relate to that because we have mining towns here, right? Yep. Globe, Morenci, Baghdad, Miami. These are all mining towns. So this was a mining town. And in 01, the mine went out of business. And so a small group of people bought the assets in 2005. And we've been redeveloping this city ever since. And so it's a massive, massive project.
It's in Southern Africa, bordered by...
Yeah. Swaziland. Actually, the name of the country was just changed because the king, it's a kingdom.
Right.
The king just changed the name of the country from Swaziland to Eswatini. And so it's surrounded on three sides by South Africa and on the east by Mozambique. So very small landlocked country there. And so we're putting a lot of effort into that project and it's been quite successful.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm very actively involved in highlighting, nurturing Arizona's international connections. In fact, I'm going to leave here and go to an event put on by the Global Chamber. There, also the Phoenix Committee on Foreign Relations has been in the studio several times to talk about some of their work. I think people don't realize the extent to which there are companies and organizations and individuals with incredible international connections. So it's an important part of our work and maintaining a perspective on things that matter to us here at home. what can we expect? As we begin to wrap up this conversation, what can we expect from Subway moving forward? I mean, obviously, you know, it's an iconic brand. It's been a market leader in so many ways, went through a little rough period on the PR side nationally, and but continues to provide, you know, really great product that people love. What's coming down? What do we expect in the future?
Well, you know, we've really evolved from a small family-owned company that exploded to be a big family-owned company, and now has brought in a lot of industry talent, and you see a lot of innovation. 2019 was a year of incredible new product news, whether it be sandwiches, beverages, whatever, and I think you'll continue to see more of that as we get into 2020 and beyond, but they're bringing a lot of people in on brand level, new product news. It's really exciting. And Rick's involvement with the purchasing cooperative, I think he gained and provided a lot of his talent to that group. But, you know, you really talk about the global thing. So really, when you start talking about new product news, you got to talk about global flavors as well. And our world has changed a lot. I mean, the old days, you threw out the Italian sandwich, a turkey sandwich, you moved on. It's not like that anymore. We used to think of QSR sandwich more in terms of McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's, and they're still there. But look at all the new sandwich players we've got in the last 10 years. And so we've got to play in all those different sandboxes. We've got to be able to take care of the sandwich side. We've got to take care of the burger side. And we got to take care of people, especially we've become known as a place to eat healthy. And
I get the salad. Yeah, that's what I
But there the definition go. Of what's healthy has changed. And it continues to change, right? Low fat, low carb, you know, whatever. So we got to stay on
paleo,
top of it.
Keto, whatever, the flavor of the month.
Yeah, and as the brand changes, we have to morph as the industry changes. A couple things. One, delivery is a big deal now, and so people are jumping on the delivery bandwagon. Online ordering is a big deal. We've got exciting new decor packages. All of the Subway restaurants in the country will be redecored, they're very fresh look, exciting. And so we've got to change with the times, and we are. There's new leadership at the corporate level, and some great things are happening there with not only with menu changes, but just how we get our product to our customers.
You know, the innovation that is coming along, and accelerating on the tech side with last mile delivery, with voice search, with, you know, all kinds of ways in which people are interacting with the brand. It almost requires a tech company inside of a restaurant in order to keep up with these things. Mark, what's your perspective?
Well, I tell people in 5 years, 40% of my business will come from channels that didn't exist 5 years ago.
Very true.
I mean, think about that. Whether Rick touched on some catering, online catering, you know, these orders come in, we'll get people that order $2,000 worth of box lunches or something. And those type of things we didn't have before, but Subway's a big ship. And sometimes turning that ship isn't as easy as you'd like. So it requires a lot of work at the restaurant level. The third party delivery thing, I mean, you know, I feel sometimes for some of our competitors, whether it be in pizza or sandwich, that are in delivery, because they went out, they invested in all the systems, all the drivers, and all the training, and now you got these third-party delivery companies that are losing tens of millions of dollars to get market share. How do they compete with that? Really, we just use somebody else's system and pay them a fee to deliver the food, and it's hard.
And then the elephant in the room is what happens when Amazon goes into the sandwich business.
I think Amazon's got a lot of things going on right now.
They do.
I'm not too worried about that just yet, although I understand they're having a little fight with President Trump today, so maybe they'll keep him busy for a while.
Maybe so, but as they continue to innovate, as we all continue to innovate, we're looking for new ways to give people what they want, where they want, when they want it. So much of that has shifted to smartphones, our expectations for the speed of delivery. I mean, gone are the days when, you know, a hot pizza in 30 minutes or less, or it's free, was a meaningful kind of market differentiator.
The difference is people used to say, where are we going to eat? Now they say, what food are we going to eat wherever we want to be, whether it's at the park, whether it be a gathering. You know, people have made their man caves to watch their sporting events. They just want the food brought in. They don't want to deal with it. My daughter is a senior in high school. When she is at a friend's house, the parents throw the credit card and say, just order whatever you want. And nobody wants to get the same thing. So they use these third-party delivery companies. So I can get pizza and you can get sandwiches. It's completely changed.
10 years ago, we used to rely on what we call aided awareness, when people would drive down the street and look at signs and make a decision about where we want to eat. Oh, there's a Subway sign, we're going to go there. Not now. They make these aided awareness decisions on their smartphones. Yep. So it's completely
geofencing,
changed.
Beacons, and all the rest. Right. So the game of marketing has changed, but it's great to see Subway continuing to be relevant. It's been a favorite brand of mine since, you know, 30 years ago, that first sandwich Aunt Jeannie told me about. I want to thank you guys for coming in today. Mark Roden, founder of Desert Subway and founder of Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona. Rick Ubel, founder of Foods 2000 Inc. and founding board member with Subway Kids and Sports of Arizona. Thank you for the great work you're doing, not only on the business front, but also in serving the folks around our state that need a little acknowledgement for the kindness that they're doing.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here.
Adrian, thanks for letting us share.
Absolutely. For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.